Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Welcome to the Project Life Mastery Podcast, where it's all about inspiring change and transforming lives. And here's your host. He's an Amazon best-selling author, six-figure blogger, internet marketer, and one of the top life coaches in the world, Stefan Palernos.
Hey, everyone. This is Stefan from ProjectLifeMastery.com. And today I'm excited to be interviewing a good friend of mine by the name of Matt Gallant. Now, Matt is a very successful internet marketer and internet entrepreneur. He's sold over $10 million worth of products and services online and has built over 39 profitable websites in various markets and sectors online. Matt is most known amongst his friends as the Mad Marketing Scientist because he's always testing and he's always optimizing things in his business. So I'm excited to have this chance to be able to interview Matt. I've got him right now on Skype. And we're going to jump into the topic of productivity because Matt recently put together a brand new blog called mattgallant.tv. And he's got a free PDF, a free resource on how to 3X your productivity and how to work the 20-hour work week. So Matt's really dived deep into productivity, how to optimize yourself, your life, your business. And so we're going to talk a lot about productivity in this interview, but a little bit about how to build an online business and really scale up your online business. So Matt, I'm so excited to have this chance to be able to talk to you. Thank you for taking the time today.
Thanks, man. It's great to have you. You know, it's been amazing to see you flourish with what you're doing. And I'm excited to talk to your audience because I think you've attracted some really powerful people.
Awesome, man. Well, before we get into some of the tips and strategies that you have for increasing your productivity, do you mind telling people a little bit about yourself and your story about how you got into business and online marketing?
Sure. So it started, I was going to university studying kinesiology, and I saw a poster on the wall that said, make $10,000 this summer. And that was pretty appealing, so I applied. And it was an application for College Pro Painters. So College Pro Painters is a franchise system. And actually, that company that owns College Pro Painters has several different franchises, very, very successful company. And I got the gig. And then they proceeded to train me into so many different aspects, from cold calling to phone to selling to how to do a painting estimate, which I'd never painted in my life, how to hire people. On and on and on. So it was really a crash course in business. I hated the painting business, but it was still awesome. So I did that for a couple of years. Then I became a personal trainer and did that for a while. But along the way, there was a light bulb in my head that went off one night that marketing is the key. It was just like that classic eureka moment that you see in the cartoons. And I became obsessed with marketing ever since that point because I just realized if you're good at marketing, you can generate revenue. You can make sales. So in terms of starting a business, it's absolutely, in my opinion, the number one skill that anybody can learn. So that started my journey to copywriting. You know, I hired John Carlson, hired Gary Halbert to mentor me. Dan Kennedy went to Gary Bencivegas, on and on and on. And then about 12 years ago, I started becoming successful online. So sold a skincare product, then created a publishing company in the guitar space, a supplement company, and too many other niches and things to go into. But, you know, I just keep trying to evolve as an entrepreneur even today. So things have changed. What I do change, how I think changes. But it's fun, man. I just love all aspects of business. To me, it's just a blast.
That's awesome. And it's really impressive what you've built online, the online empire that you've built. But you're most known, I guess, because you're a master at data, optimizing, testing things. Why has that attracted you the most to, you know, that side of business?
Well, you know, people make the mistake of thinking of optimization as an analytical process. To me, it's a creative process, and I'm a creative guy. You know, I'm about 50-50, 50 right brain, 50 left brain, and I love the creative side of it. That's what excites me. So in other words, I'm going to create two different ideas, throw them in the octagon, throw them in the arena, and see which one prevails. So I love experiments more than anything else in my life, and that's why it attracted me since day one. I mean, I remember John Reese talking about split testing, and that was another light bulb moment. I'm like, yeah, it makes sense. I can just keep testing, optimizing, improving the results. And, you know, it's been probably the thing I've done the most, and it's probably been my number one habit for being successful online, because a lot of projects that I did wouldn't have worked had I just stopped early, or a lot of projects made me, you know, 10 times more money because I optimized. So that obviously keeps fueling the passion for it.
Awesome. And I think the core essence is the mindset of improvement. You're always finding ways to improve things, whether it's an ad, a sales page, a product, something in your life, whether it's a routine, a habit. Is that what you would say it really comes down to, is just an obsession just to improve things and make it better and better? Whereas a lot of people, they're just content with just putting up one ad or putting up one product or version of a website.
100%. It's 100% an obsession with constant improvement. I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with the word Kaizen, which is a Japanese word for gradual improvements. And that's what my whole life is about on every level, whether it's financial, business, physical, emotional, spiritual. I know there's no ceiling, and I love the fact that I can continue to grow. Growth for me is a massive payoff. Like, I get, there's nothing that jacks me up more than growing, more than improving. There's probably some massive dopamine release in my brain, and it just fuels the passion for it.
So let's jump into productivity. What are some of the top tips that you have to increase your productivity?
First of all, productivity is one of those things that never stops. Like, there's no ceiling on that. You can always be more productive. And if I look at how much I've improved and how much I've changed since I started business to today, it's several thousand percent. And I know that maybe 10 years from now, I'll improve even more. So it's never ending. So I'm going to cover some big, broad principles, and then we can dive into some deeper stuff if you want. The first one is to prioritize. And there's a lot of things to prioritize. One is, are you in the right market? You know, are you in the right industry? Like, and let's use you as an example. I remember just a few years ago you were here, and you were, you know, selling ebooks you weren't that excited about. And then I look at you now, where you're doing something that's aligned with your essence, it's aligned with who you are, and look at the difference in success. So that's a great example of, are you prioritizing the right industry? You know, and you got to obviously choose things you're excited about, choose things you're passionate about. So that's the first priority. Second, and this leads into effectiveness. And prioritization also involves, are you prioritizing the right projects? Are you prioritizing the right task? Are you prioritizing the right money moves, which we can get into? Then there's effectiveness. And I want to differentiate effectiveness and efficiency. It's far more important to be effective than it is to be efficient. So effective means you're in the right industry. You're working on the right projects. You're working on the right money moves. Like, you're doing the right things. And then being efficient means you're really good at those things. You're really fast. But efficiency is one of the biggest things you got to always be aware of, because it's easy to waste your time. Then efficiency is critical too. You know, learning to be fast. And it's funny, a mutual friend of ours was commenting that he was seeing you work on the computer, and he says the same thing when he sees me work. And he just comments how he can barely follow what I'm doing, right? And that's just because I'm very efficient, and I know all the shortcuts, and you know all the shortcuts. So that's important too. That helps us obviously get more out of every minute. Then you get into some higher level things like team building. That becomes critical because at the end of the day, there's only one you, there's only one me. So our ability to replicate ourselves and replicate our money moves, replicate our tasks, is really where the ceiling comes into play. You know, if you had 25 of you, 25 Stephens out there doing what you're doing today, you'd probably be making 25 times more money. So that's where team building comes in. And then the biggest leverage point in productivity is what I call focused ferocity. And you have to have a lot of other things in play. But once you know what your money move is and you're doing the right thing, that's the most important thing, you're doing the right thing, then it becomes about intensity. And I'll give you a simple example that's very black and white, which is writing. So I started writing the blog for my blog in January. I was writing about 500 words an hour. I wasn't that efficient. I mean, now I'm at about 1,200 words. So if I look at that, that's, you know, more than double. And I could probably get up to 1,500, 2,000 words an hour by continuing to try to push myself, continuing to get more efficient, continuing to build that skill. But where else could I triple my time like that? You know what I mean? So this is where the 20-hour work week comes in, because if you can be three times more effective doing the right things, you're going to be more productive than
most people are at 40, 50 hours of doing the wrong things at a normal intensity. All the people that I'm friends with
that are worth eight figures, nine figures, they're all intense people. You know, they're intense with their conversations. They can be polite. They can be pleasant. Doesn't mean you're not pleasant or polite, but they have an intensity about them that you won't find in a lot of other people. And then last but not least is you have to recover, because when you're really pushing your brain and you're practicing focused ferocity, you're going to get tired. And I'm not just talking about being tired after an hour. There's a cumulative tiredness too. Just like if you train really hard for a competition like you have, there's a tiredness after 3 months of doing that that's very different than just one workout. So for an example, I've really pushed myself for 3 months straight, the first 3 months. And then last week and this week, I'm recovering and relaxing a lot more and getting ready for the next big wave. So it's very different than, I'm not taking vacations because I don't like what I do. I take vacations and breaks and recover to prepare me for another wave of intensity. Just like we do with training, you got to balance intensity with recovery. So that's the big picture. And obviously there's a lot of little things that come into all of those.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk a little bit about the prioritization. I find that valuable. Do you find, I mean, you're running multiple businesses. You got a lot of different projects going on. How do you prioritize your time? Do you try to simplify things as much as possible to your primary skill sets? Because, I mean, you're extremely skilled at copywriting, ad copy, creating systems. And one thing I found with myself is that at a certain point, I just kind of gave up trying to be a master at everything. I much rather focused on just going really, really deep on a few core skill sets and get, you know, really, really skilled at that and try to simplify things and just prioritize my time doing that and then have other people, you know, try to do everything else for me. Is that kind of the same way that you operate your businesses, or how do you prioritize your time?
Well, let's talk about, and I want to talk about this because I think most people listening are probably in this level. And that's it. Let's say you're a one or two or three person team, because it changes. My answer is going to change quite a bit, and we can get into that. But let's go back to the beginning. So if I'm alone, or maybe I got a tech guy and a webmaster, or even I have a business partner, it really becomes about focusing on one project at a time and getting it done. You got to drive it to completion. So just like maybe when you film a product, you get laser beam, right? There's nothing else going on. You're going to block off a couple days, bang that out. So that's key. You know, you have to drive on one project until it's out there, because until it's out there, it's just grabbing RAM. It's not making you money. It's costing you money. It's costing you mental energy. And that's a big concept I want to highlight, is you have to protect your mental energy. You only have so much RAM. And I'm very, very protective about my RAM. Like, there's so many things I do in my life to protect my RAM, and we can get into that. But so picking the right project is the first part of prioritization. Then, absolutely, when I was a 2-3 person team, I had four things that I did. These were my four money moves. And money moves is the things that if you only did that, your business would continue to make more money. Everything else you shouldn't touch. You know, you should outsource, hire, get you know, customer support, hire a manager, hire, do whatever it takes to get all that stuff off your plate. And that's a great example of protecting my RAM, because all that stuff drains me. And I don't want to be drained, right? I want to be fresh. I want to be powerful. So my money moves back in the day was work on AdWords, you know, maybe about an hour a day, because we were spending, you know, well into the six figures a month on AdWords. So there was a lot of leverage there. Number two, create emails, because if, you know, our list was at our peak 1.5 million leads. So that there's a lot of leverage in creating emails, then writing copy and split testing. So those were the four things that I did to grow and launch the businesses. And those are four great money moves that anybody can focus on. And it depends on who you are. Like in your case, maybe it's being in video is your money move, because you're building your audience, you're getting more people, you're getting more leads. So your money moves will change, and that's important too. Like my money moves change probably every 6 months. And this is also where the team comes in. Like I don't write as much copy as I used to. Now, here's a productivity strategy. So 10-90-10. So as you build things out, I'll be involved in the first 10%. Then whoever's going to execute is going to run with it for 80% of it. And then I'm going to come in at the last 10. So it's 10-80-10, sorry. So in the last 10%, I'm going to come in and really rip it apart and optimize and improve it. So, you know, I'm not the one doing the bulk of it. Sometimes I still do. And that's an important thing. And I'll give you a great example that's right here, right now. So in one of my businesses, we're going to completely redo the funnel. You know, we're doing a completely new strategy. And I feel that it's so critical that I'm going to do it myself. So it depends which business I'm talking about. And I'll give you another specific example. In the publishing business, I don't write copy there anymore because it's not as critical. Like whether I write the copy or not on a launch, it's going to be maybe 10-20% difference in revenue, because we have the formula down so much. And I've got a guy that I've trained very well. But with this new funnel, it can be a $10 million funnel if I do it correctly. So I'm not going to outsource that. And that's an example of prioritizing. I'm prioritizing that on top of my list, and I'm going to do it myself. So, you know, there's no black and white answers on prioritization, but, you know, I'm going to take that and I'm going to focus on that. And that's going to be my main thing until it's done. And then I'll do something else after. So, that's the quick and dirty of the prioritization.
The RAM, I think the same way. And I mean, it's not even whether you can do it, because, you know, you can be more than capable of doing all these things, but it's more so the mental energy that task can take up in your head and consume your mental thought process. And I remember Mark Zuckerberg and people like that, they wear the exact same clothes every single day just to prevent decision fatigue, because the more decisions you have to make, the more things you have to occupy your mind with, it drains you. And I found for myself and my business, there's just these little things that I could easily do myself, but I just have accepted that I'm just going to have someone else do them for me, because I want to make sure that my mind is as sharp and focused as possible. So that's really cool. I want to ask you about planning and scheduling. Do you typically have a method of planning out your month, your week, your day? How do you go about that?
Yeah, I mean, I've tried a lot of different things. I'm always kind of experimenting to see what works. And what I find works is a combination of rigid and flexible. So I've tried like scheduling my entire week, pretty much every hour. And that mentally for me was just constricting. And mentally for me, it was draining. So now, it's about 50-50. So 50% of my time is scheduled because I have meetings with the teams, and I also have some time for my money moves. But then the other 50% is open for meeting with people, talking with people on Skype, because I think networking is a great money move. And just having some time to just do whatever I feel like in the moment. So it's about 50-50. But one of the things that I've done that's evolved is I used to schedule meetings like any day of the week. Now I have 2 days a week where I have all my meetings. So that allows me to just get in that mode, that zone, meet with people. And then on the other days, it's more about creating. It's more about either writing or filming or whatever it is that I'm working on as far as a project. So that was a powerful upgrade for me that I just did maybe 6 months ago.
Yeah, and it's tough to restrict yourself when you're doing something in your business that requires creativity and flow, because, you know, if only set an hour for myself to record a video, then that's not going to allow me to really take advantage of that flow state, because sometimes you might be doing something, you might be on fire, you might be in that flow, and you just want to prolong that as much as possible because what you're doing is so high leverage and so important. Do you tend to, you know, each day maybe like plan the day before or the day in the morning and maybe just, okay, here's the highest priority things I'm going to do? Do you try to focus on the most important thing first thing in the morning? How do you go about that?
Yeah, I mean, right now, because blogging is a new thing and writing is a relative new thing, or writing this type of content is a new thing, that's the first thing that I do every day. I write for between an hour and 2 hours. So that's a lot of mental energy, and I'm getting in the habit of that. This month, I'll give another example that I'm going to do this month. Now, that's become more or less a habit, okay, because I've been doing it for about 3 months. So the next thing I'm going to do is YouTube. So I'm going to launch a YouTube channel, and that's going to be one of the first things I do every morning, and I'm going to make sure I get in the habit and in the groove of that. So, you know, this is a great conversation. That's batching versus doing it daily. Now, batching is more efficient. So batching means, okay, I'm going to take an entire day and film. But one of the things I learned from Elliot Hulse, who's one of my partners in some projects, is that when you're starting, don't batch. You know, get in the daily habit. Like, that's what he did to build himself up. And that's what I'm going to do. So, because I think it's like learning a language. One of the key things when learning a new language is you have to practice daily, because that neural net that you're building really shrinks even with 1 day of rest. So for that reason, I'm going to be using a habit building strategy versus a batching strategy. Now, once it's a habit, I'll probably start batching at that point. But I really want to build the skill of being on camera. So for that reason, I'm going to be doing it early in the morning and most likely daily.
Awesome. Another thing I want to ask is, do you use any apps or software, anything like that, to help be productive?
I just use, I have BusyCal on the Mac. I'll use Google Calendar. So nothing fancy. In my teams, this is something funny, but in my teams, we use different tools like Redbooth, which is a good project management, but I don't go in there, okay? That's an example of protecting my RAM. I don't manage projects. I don't want to manage people. I have partners and project managers and operation managers. So for me to even go in there and take a look is a massive mental drain. So I don't go in there. You know, I know what I'm responsible for and I take care of it, but I don't want to be going in there and wasting my RAM, wasting that mental energy. So we do use tools as a team, and we like Redbooth, but I don't go there.
And I've found a key that that's a key thing is really knowing what the distractions are, because the distractions are what can kill you, right? Like,
yeah.
Even for me, like if I, you know, if I'm in the middle of something and I go on Facebook or I go into email, whatever, I just know that that's going to take me down a dark path. And before you know it, like you think you're going to Facebook or emails to check something for 5 minutes, but it ends up, you know, you end up doing all these different things and it just totally sidetracks you from what you're focused on at the time. Do you do anything like that to help eliminate distractions?
Yeah, well, this is a great segue into focus. So focus, people look at focus only from one side of it. So focus has two sides. The first side is eliminating distractions. And if you think about it, let's say you had zero distractions, external or internal, it's really easy to focus at that point, because focusing is just really about, you know, putting your concentration on that one thing or whatever you're doing. But if you're fighting distractions, whether, again, it's external or internal, and they're both real, then it becomes much more of a battle. So the first thing that I like to teach people when it comes to focus is just eliminate the distractions. And one of the biggest ones is obviously what you just mentioned, social media. You know, put your phone on airplane mode. There's a great software called Rescue Time, which I like using. And in Rescue Time, they have a feature called Focus Time. I hit that, and basically, it just shuts down all the websites that are distracting. I can't easily hit them. There is even more hardcore software that just disconnects your internet for 60, 90 minutes. So that's what I do at first. Like, if I'm going to write, all right, let's eliminate all the distractions. Let's make it hard for me to go there. You know, because again, I don't want to be fighting human nature. Like, I'm as addicted to social media and Facebook as anyone else is. So I do make sure that I shut down all those easy outs. And the other big thing that I do is headphones. Headphones with music, even though it's as much as, for some reason, having the headphones seem to help me go more internal, especially if I'm writing. And even the choice of music is a big deal. Like, I don't want any music with any lyrics. Lyrics and words are distracting, in my opinion. So I usually listen to soundtracks, movie soundtracks, because they're emotional, but they don't distract me. They don't distract my brain. They'll give me that emotional feeling. So choosing the right music, I think, is a big deal if you're going to listen to music. So those are some of the things that I do for focus. For eliminating distractions.
Yeah, what about your environment? You know, I've been to your place there in Panama City, beautiful penthouse. You know, in your office, you've got a big whiteboard. Do you find, you know, there's certain things like that, having the whiteboard or anything in your environment that helps you focus?
Well, one of the things that I'm always battling with in my dream is to have a Zen environment, which it's not, right? It's relatively messy, but I'm trying to get there. So even my whiteboard right now is pretty much clean. It is a proven fact that messiness is a mental distractor.
Right.
You know, it steals some of that mental energy. So I'm working on, you know, buying little things like this thing, which is to put my headphones on, right?
Right.
So it just helps my environment become more zen. And same thing with papers or whiteboards. So. No, I think the cleaner, the less stuff you can have, the better. But my nature is to be creative and to clutter. So
yeah.
It's a constant battle.
Totally. It's the whole mad scientist thing, right? Sometimes the scientists in the lab, everything's a mess. But that's,
absolutely.
Yeah. What about people? I know a lot of people that are watching this, they're people that have a job, right? They got their 9-to-5 and they want to start an online business, you know, so that they can eventually make enough money to quit their job. And I work with a lot of these people, and a lot of them, they have that challenge of just time. And what kind of advice would you have for someone like that, where, you know, they've got a job that's sucking up most of their time? They only have, you know, a few hours in the evening, or maybe they could do it in the morning and the weekend. And as both you and I know, in order to get out of that, you're going to have to make a sacrifice and really work really hard to get out of that. But any advice that you have for someone that's in that situation?
For sure. And some of my business partners, were people in that situation, and then after it took off, they quit. So the key thing is you have to go to beast mode. Like, you have to go to a place where it's an obsession to be successful. It's an obsession to make this thing work, whatever it is that you're working on. So if you're working 40 hours a week, and I'll give you an example of how, like, where I was with this. So my early 20s, I was working 40 hours a week for the gym, not for myself. Then I would do 30 to 40 hours of personal training on top of that. So I'd start 2 hours before my shift and then work another 4 or 5 hours after my shift plus Saturdays. And on top of that, I was learning marketing. So after I would get home at 9, 10 o'clock, I would be watching Ted Nicholas, Gary Halbert, Dan Kennedy, and doing those exercises so I could build my copywriting skills. That's what it took. So I had no TV, and that was the biggest thing. Now I have a TV, and it's like, it is a big distraction. There's a lot of shows I enjoy watching. But during those 5, 6 years, I didn't have that. So, that mental energy I had, I just put it into learning. And if you're not successful yet enough to have it be your full-time thing, most likely you have to spend probably an hour a day learning. And one of the big things is balancing your learning with action. And I call that the action learning equation. So a lot of people make the mistake of spending 90 or 100% of their time learning. They're reading books, they're watching YouTube videos, they're buying courses, they're going to seminars, but there's no action. And the big thing to realize is that your learning will be 3x or 5x if you take action every time you learn something. So that's really been one of my keys to success. Is I'll go to an event, or I'll watch a YouTube video, or I'll buy a book, read the book. I'm going to take at least one or two or three nuggets, and I'm going to apply it right away. And then it becomes my reality. Now I own that information. It's not just stuff floating around in my head and taking space. So it's really important to take a lot of action and be learning. You can't just be action, action, action if you don't know really what you're doing. But at the same time, you can't be just learning, learning, learning. So you got to balance that. That's a really big deal.
Yeah, I was a dating coach for several years, and a lot of guys that get caught up just learning all the theory. But the theory is useless if you can't go out there and talk to a girl or interact with someone, right? So I'd always tell people you're going to learn so much more, probably 10 times more, just going out there trying to talk to someone, socialize, than you ever will from reading about it in a book. Right. But it is that balance of you got to, get out there and get some results or some sort of feedback and then analyze that and improve it and learn how you can do things better. So that's awesome. Now, because I'm the morning ritual guy and I've got a course on morning rituals, I'm a big fan of them. What kind of morning ritual do you have?
Yeah, that's always evolving too. So I'll tell you what I'm doing right now. So I wake up. Hit the bathroom. Then I have an Oura Ring, so this thing, and this is a sleep tracker. I've been waiting for this thing for a long time. I didn't want to wear a wrist thing, and I didn't want to be hit with Bluetooth, so I can shut down the Bluetooth with the ring. And anyways, it's awesome. So I wake up, look at that data. I'll usually do a HRV reading, so I'll strap the H7. Heart strap, and then use Nature Beat or Ben Greenfield's app and look at what my HRV is, so I know if I can train hard this day or not. And then the latest thing I've been doing is I bought the Wim Hof course, and I'm doing the Wim Hof breathing method, which is like some really intense breathing, oxygenate the body big time. And I'm doing that with an Elanra air ionizer. It's an Australian air ionizer. So you're breathing in super, super negatively charged ions. So that's going to detox your lungs and your body. So I'm doing the breathing technique with that. It's powerful. And then usually I'll have a bulletproof coffee. So that's usually my morning ritual. And I always pound water. I usually have half a liter of water. That's the first thing I do. That just wakes me up. I'll have some Kangen water, which you're a big fan of too. That wakes me up right away. Just pound the water and boom, my brain's alive.
I know you're a health advocate. You know, you're a founder of Bioptimizers. How much do you feel health plays a role in productivity?
It really determines your ceiling. It determines your limit. You know, like you've seen Tony Robbins on stage, right? Could somebody that's not super healthy and super vital physically be able to do what he does? They'd collapse halfway through day one, right? I mean, the level of energy he's outputting is just world class. And he treats himself like a world class athlete. The technology he uses, the recovery technology he does, everything he does is to optimize his health, his performance, and his energy. And it shows. So that's what's possible. And people don't realize, but thinking is a physical energy. I mean, it requires a lot. If you're really thinking hard, you know, especially if you're doing something new, it requires tremendous mental energy. I mean, whether it's being in front of the camera and you're really turning it on, or you're really thinking hard and writing, or you're networking, all these things require mental energy. So if you don't have the physicality to have that energy, you're going to struggle. Same thing with endurance. You know, and we can talk about the muscle side of focus. You know, focus is a muscle. And at first, if you've never focused, and most people have the attention span of below less than a goldfish. A goldfish is 9 seconds. Humans are down to 8 seconds. That's a statistic, not my opinion. So at first, it's tough, right? Because our brain, especially with all the notifications and social media, we're just used to literally splitting or changing our attention every 2 seconds. You know, we're flipping and clicking and liking and going and looking at that and going back. Like, that's how our brains are functioning. So focusing is the complete opposite of that. It's going to say, okay, I'm going to do one thing for 45 minutes. And for 45 minutes, it's probably tough at first. So my suggestion is just like meditation. I mean, meditation, don't try to do 30 minutes or 20 minutes. Start with 5 minutes. Start with 10 minutes. And it's the same thing with focusing and having that focus ferocity. Maybe you can only keep it up for 15 minutes at first. So then you need a 5-minute break, and you come back and do another 15 minutes. Then you need another 5-minute break. But the ability, like now I can focus for 90 minutes to 2 hours. I wasn't able to do that even last year. So I see the progress, and I think a lot of that, I mean, I take a lot of different supplements for mental energy, for brain power, and I think they're paying off in that regard, because I just see the gains that I'm making with it. It's always a combination of continuing to strengthen that muscle. And, you know, I'll give you an example of how important it is for me. I've spent recently about $15,000 optimizing my sleep. I bought a custom made, you know, $9,000 mattress. I could go on and on, right? But that's how important to me the recovery is, because I know it's the key to having more energy. And I know it's going to pay. Like, for me, that's a financial investment. I'm going to get that money back in the next 6 months or 9 months or 12 months.
Yeah. I remember actually Kobe Bryant, he went to Nike to make a shoe. He wanted like a little millimeter taken off the shoe just to make it a little bit lighter. Like, he was so obsessed. And it seems crazy, but it would just improve his explosiveness just like a tiny amount. But I guess that's how you have to look at optimizing things. You're not necessarily going for this big change or big result, but it's just the little changes here and there that add up to be the big things, right?
Absolutely. You know, Einstein said that compound interest is the 8th wonder of the world. And people just think of that financially, but compound interest is in every area of our life. And it's working whether you're aware of it or you're not aware of it, because there's negative compound interest too. And if you take a look at your health habits, you know, let's say you eat good, you train, you know, you take time to recover. That is one of those things that compounds. You'll get healthier and healthier. You'll have, if I look at somebody who's doing a little bit of health habits and I look at their compounding health over 20, 30, 40, 50 years, and then you have somebody who's got bad health habits, and you see what the compounding effect of that is, I mean, it's night and day, right? You just see that divide. It's almost like a boat that is 2 degrees to the left and another boat is 2 degrees to the right. After a few days, they're going to be quite far apart. And that's how I look at everything, you know, whether it's our work habits, our health habits, our productivity habits, they're all compounding. You know, one of my favorite books is The Compound Effect, because it really hammers this home. So, and in over time, over 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, you get the rewards of the right things, you know, the rewards of the right habits. And it's the difference between success and failure, in my opinion.
Let's talk a little bit about rest. You know, obviously it's not sustainable long-term just to, you know, be as productive as possible in the sense of like working early in the morning to late at night, because eventually you need to rest. Have you seen a lot of benefit in just, I don't know, maybe in your evenings, like you watch TV or you just do something maybe on the weekends to have fun or go out just to recharge in that way? Like, do you have certain things you do every day or on every week?
Absolutely. It's as critical. It's another thing that determines the ceiling. Like, you have to match the output, the intensity with recovery. Like, you have to balance that. So, you know, and when I was talking about working 80 hours a week and studying, that was in my early 20s. And I wouldn't recommend, I mean, if you have to do that to get out of your job, that's great. But here's some numbers for you. The maximum level of productivity, like let's say somebody wanted to be the most productive they possibly can, it's between 53, 56 hours a week. After that, like people that work 70, 75 hours have about the same level as the guys working, you know, 53, 54 hours. So there's no gains past that point. And that's important. And that's a critical thing to realize. And this is going to answer your question. Is to maintain focused ferocity, I need to put the recovery in there. Because otherwise, my energy is going to go like this. It's going to dwindle. It's going to dwindle. It's going to dwindle. It's going to dwindle. And I'm going to be 100%, but my output is going to be dropping, 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 because I'm out of mental energy. I'm out of physical energy. So the first thing is micro recovery. So you have to figure out what the optimal thing is for you. Maybe, you know, a lot of people like Pomodoro, which is 25 minutes on and 5 minutes off. That's a good place to start. I did 45-15 for a long time. So 45 minutes on and 15 minutes, you know, walking around, going rebounding, you know, playing the guitar. Just change the channel. Like, get out of the office. Just take a quick walk. Play with your dog. Play with your daughter. Just change the channel. And then you're recovered, you're recharged, and you go back at it. So 45-15, 45-15, and then a 30-minute lunch snack break is a great strategy. What I tend to do these days, and again, that's just a product of time, is more 90 minutes on, maybe 20, 25 minutes off. So I like just getting, because I get in the flow state, like you mentioned, which I think is a big part of productivity. And I don't want to get out, right? I don't want to get out until I start sensing the drop. And the drop usually happens after 90 minutes. So that's in the day-to-day, like throughout the day, I need to make sure I take those micro breaks. That's critical. Then absolutely in the evenings, I'll usually learn a little bit in the evenings for maybe an hour, 90 minutes. And then I'm done. So, and then I spend time with my wife. And that's a big part of my recharge, you know, spending time with her, watching a show, talking, walking, going to see a movie, going to a restaurant. To me, that's critical because I don't want to get lost in work and lose focus of the bigger picture. You know, work is not my life. It's just part of it. And then I don't work Saturdays and Sundays 95% of the time. Sometimes when there's a critical project and I got to get it done, then I'll work on Saturdays. Sundays is sacred. Not from a religious standpoint, but from a recovery standpoint. And then there's the bigger recovery, which means about every 3 months, I feel I need 10 days off. So that means I'll start like on a Friday, and then I'll take all the next week and the next weekend off, preferably on a trip. And I don't work, I don't answer the computer, I'm not in meetings. And that's a deeper recharge. And I love what Eben Pagan called it, and he says you get altitude. You know, you get out of the trenches, and you're flying above your business at 30,000 feet. And you're able to see things that you just can't see when you're just in a day-to-day grind. So I often come up with my best ideas, my best visions, my best game plans, the next level of upgrades during those 10 days. Even though I'm not trying, they tend to happen. So that's my big recovery program. And I'm fanatical about sleep, like I just mentioned. I think sleep, not just the length of sleep, the quality of sleep. So you got to sleep deep. And this is where the Oura Ring comes in. It gets me out of the realm of opinions. It tells me if I'm in deep sleep, how long I'm in deep sleep, if I'm waking up. It gives me a definitive rating on the quality of it. So it's awesome.
So do you guys in your business plan out the projects you're working on? So, you, for example, you've got one big project you're working on for this month, and then you also plan, okay, after that project is done, that's when I'm going to take my 10-day trip. So you plan out certain things like that several months in advance?
Yeah, we plan, well, first we have the ultimate vision for the business. What's the ultimate, right? Which is different from a goal. So that's the ultimate. Then we have a very broad 3-year vision, very broad. Then we have a very concrete 1-year plan. And then we break it down into quarters, 90 days. So we'll meet for a couple of days. And there's a great book called Traction, which I recommend for everyone. It's really changed how we operate. So everything I'm telling you came from that. So we'll meet for a couple of days and then really plan the next 90 days. Okay, what's the game plan? What are we going to do? And prioritize, and then everybody gets assigned rocks or projects for that 90 days, and you agree to it, and then boom, that's it. So there's no more projects coming in. There's nothing else that's going to take your attention. For the next 90 days, you know what you're going to do, and that's it. That's your game plan. So that's how we do it.
Cool. And by the way, actually, I found out about the book Traction from Wade, who's your business partner. Wade and I were working out, and he shows up at the gym one day, and he's like, dude, this book is changing our business, and he was super excited about it. So I was actually reading it on the airplane the other day. So really, really good book. I want to ask, go a little bit more advanced. For people, you know, you mentioned before, you recommend people that are starting out focus on one project. Obviously, once you start having more success and the position that you're in, you're able to focus on multiple businesses, multiple projects. What kind of advice do you have to be able to run and operate multiple businesses?
Yeah, it's a very different way of operating. There's another great book called Rocket Fuel. And it's something I discovered before I read it, but then I read it and it was just good validation. And the basic breakdown is there's two types of people, visionaries and integrators. And the visionaries are people that have the ideas, come up with the vision, come up with the game plan, and then the integrators get it done. So my reality is, and you can talk to my business partners about this, you know, I have more ideas than, like, I would probably need to just to match my level of output in terms of ideas, I would probably need about 15 solid integrators. So every business that I have is I'm partner with a good integrator, and then so they're running the day to day. They're because again, I hate doing that. I don't want to do it, and it's not it's completely, you know, misaligned with my nature. So they're running the day to day. And then I come in and I do what I do best, which is create ideas on how to grow the business. And there's a lot of ways that I do that. But and usually like 1 hour or 2 hours of my output will create dozens and dozens or sometimes even 100 hours of work for the team to implement. So that's one of the reasons I'm able to have and be part of multiple businesses is it takes a lot of time to execute the visions, the ideas. But the key is you got to get the right people. That's life or death when it comes to this. So I'm blessed that I have good partners. Now, even within a business, one of the things that we're starting to do in our publishing business is intrapreneurs. So it's the same idea, but it's not another business. It's kind of a business within the business. So I found this guy, young guy, and I just saw myself in him, just, you know, level 10 drive, just beast mode, right? Met him at an event and did an interview, and it was a good click. So we're bringing him on, and we're starting kind of another niche, another market, and he's going to run that. And obviously, he gets access to all of our resources, the webmasters, the traffic team. We help him. We groom him. We even bring him a copywriter. But he's the integrator. So then I get a chance to just be the visionary in that, and so does the main president of that business. So that's a new way that I'm playing with growing. It's bringing more intrapreneurs into my businesses and kind of giving them an arena that they can run, that they can have fun in and do their thing.
Mm. So you partner with a lot of people, right? That's one way that you're able to leverage yourself in some way. Do you have any maybe additional tips for just team building and maybe attracting the right people to partner with or even to hire the right people?
Yeah, well, those are two very different things. So let's start with partnering. Partnering with people, you know, it's a big decision. It's essentially, it's maybe not as heavy as a marriage, but it's close. So in the beginning, if you look at how you would choose a girl when you were in high school, your criteria is very different today because you've had a lot of learning experiences. So every partnership that you try, it will teach you what you want, what you don't want. But what it really comes down to in business is knowing yourself, you know, to thy own self be true. So that's where personality tests, like I would do as many tests as you can. Briggs and Myers, Colby, DISC, Caliper, you know, do an IQ test. You want to know where you're strong. You want to know where you're weak. You want to know what your nature is and what your nature isn't. Because it's a guaranteed recipe for disaster if you're going to try to do things that you don't enjoy doing. It's a guaranteed recipe for disaster if you're trying to do things that you hate doing, that you know, that's, so if you know these things, then in business, which is awesome, you can find people that's their strengths. And that's the kind of partner you want to find. So again, one of the big things is, are you a visionary or are you an integrator? If you're a visionary, you have to have an integrator. Because if you're two visionaries, you're going to struggle. You're going to be like, on the whiteboard for weeks, and you're going to have, you know, a 50-page Google Doc with the biggest vision in the world, but nothing's going to get done, right? But if you have two integrators in the same room, there's nothing that's going to get done either because they don't know what to do. They're not the guys coming up with the ideas. You know, they're not game planners. They don't have vision. So that's one of the biggest things is, are you a visionary or are you an integrator? And find your complement. And obviously, you got to get along with personally. I tend not to partner with friends and family. I think it's a mistake. But I always become friends with my partners. So there's a big difference, right? So, you know, but sometimes it happens. I mean, you know, Wade, like you mentioned, is a good friend of mine. We were friends before we became partners. So in that case, it worked. But I don't become partners because he's a friend. That's never happened. You know, what I call functional capability is the key thing. And that means, are they capable of doing what it is that they're meant to be doing? So if I partner up with someone and they're the ones that are going to handle operations, right? They're the operations guy. If they're not an operations person, if they don't have the skill set, then it's a mistake. So again, it goes back to thy own self be true. And that goes both ways. You need to know what their strengths and their weaknesses are. So it's a good idea to do personality tests both ways. So that's on the partner side. On the employee side, You know, I keep making the process deeper and deeper because hiring a superstar is such a big thing, and it's not easy. You're talking maybe 2% of the population is what I would call a superstar. So 98% of the people out there, you want to try to filter them out. So I have a lot of techniques, and let's use Upwork as an example. So for those of you that don't know Upwork.com, there's hundreds of thousands of providers you can go on and hire. So the first thing that I do is I use their search engine, and I eliminate, I mean, anybody that's not 4 stars and up, automatically out. Then I look at their work history, and if there's any, you know, I look for red flags. I'm looking for red flags. Then I'll do, and I do a lot of doofus tests. So what I'm trying to do is I want them to show me that they're either a doofus or not a doofus. So this is filtering. And what I want to do is I'll send them an invitation. And I really look at how they respond. And I might ask a couple of questions. Again, they're doofus tests. And if they're not a good communicator, or if there's anything off in their communication, okay, they're gone. So that's step two, okay? I'm starting to filter. Then step three is I do more doofus tests. And I'll set up some doofus tests. I'll give you an example we did recently for copywriting. So we wanted to hire a copywriter. So we had 4 simple questions. It was great. You know, this was a new evolution in our hiring process. So we created a Google form, and there was 4 doofus test questions they had to answer. And it eliminated 95% of the applicants. So we didn't even have to talk to them. So that's the third step. Then comes the interview. The best book out there on interviewing is called Top Grading by Brad Smart. That's the book to use. If you do nothing else, just get Top Grading and follow the Top Grading process. It's gold. And there's one question, they call it the torque, where you ask them if for a reference, and then you ask them, well, if I call your reference, or when I call your reference, what do you think they're going to say about you? And that question, that question is just gold, right? Because they know you're going to call them, or they believe you're going to call them, and so they're a lot less apt to lie. And that's why it's a torque, right? Because you're torquing them on that. And it's very powerful. So that's step 4. And then even with that, I'll have my operations manager do the first phase, because maybe there's 10 people left. So she'll interview all 10. So now we're left with 3. So I'll do an interview with the last 3. And then we'll give them another doofus test, like something real. Okay, like build this web page, write this letter. So with the copywriting example, we had 2 guys at the end. And 1 guy was a complete disaster. Like even after he passed all the other tests, what he gave us was awful. So we were left with one guy, one winner. So that's the process. So it is involved. And at this point, I have people in my businesses that do the first 90%, and then I'll come in at the end because it's too time consuming. It's about 20 hours of work to just do that. But hiring superstars is going to make or break you when you start scaling, and you have to go that deep. You can't cut corners. Every time we've hired out of convenience, it's bitten us in the ass hard.
And how about managing your team? Do you guys do weekly meetings, or what do you guys do in that front?
Well, we follow the Traction process. We always did weekly meetings, and I think Traction's made the meetings better. So yeah, we meet weekly, and then the business will be divided into teams. So there'll be a big group meeting where everybody in marketing will meet, and then everybody in operations will meet, and that includes the business leaders. But then, you know, if we have a Facebook team or a cold traffic team, we'll meet on top of that as well. Especially if that's like going back to my money move, if that's my main thing, then I'm going to be involved. You know, I'm going to be driving on that. So Yeah, there's big meetings where everybody's involved, and then there's smaller meetings if you have, again, depending on the size of your business, but if you have different little divisions, smaller teams, then yeah, meeting. And one of the books I just finished reading it a couple of days ago, is Scrum, The Art of Doing Twice as Much in Half the Time. So I'm thinking of implementing that process, which is just a 5 to 15 minute daily Scrum meeting. Where, you know, what did you do and what are you going to do and what was done, basically, is the meeting. It's very quick, because I find that, especially if it's a new mission, like I was talking about creating a new marketing funnel, I got to be on it daily, and I want to be coordinating with all the key people daily. Otherwise, things get off track, and it takes you months to figure out they're off track. So that's happened recently. And I feel we need to upgrade that process. So I think Scrum's going to solve that.
All right, man. Well, this has been amazing. I could, you know, we've been talking for a while. We've gone into so many different topics, and I could probably go on with you for several more hours. But I guess just to wrap up, do you have any final tips or advice or wisdom? You know, you've been in business for over a decade now. Any top most important lessons that you've learned that you could share with our audience?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, I think optimization in business is one of the most important habits to build. And if it's something where you're feeling mental resistance going there, which a lot of people do for some reason, fight that, because it's a lot of fun and it's a massive leverage point. Literally in about 30 minutes a week max, you can be constantly growing your business. So what we do is maybe 30 minutes. We come up with some different ideas, and then the webmaster sets it up and we're done, right? So, and then you just look at the data. It might take a month to get enough data to end the test. So maybe you're coming up with one new idea a week for different parts of your marketing funnel, and that's it. But that habit will probably double or triple your revenue over time, like with the same amount of traffic. So I'm not talking about getting more traffic. Just same amount of traffic, you'll double or triple your net profit. So it's probably one of the biggest habits. Second is, you know, put your standards as high as possible when it comes to the people you accept in your life as partners and as teammates. Because I'm telling you, man, the difference between B grade and A grade is it's far. You know, it's like, you know, when Michael Jordan was making $100 million a year in his prime, and the average player was making, you know, $1 million. That's the kind of difference I'm talking about in terms of the results. Over time, the gap between a superstar and a B grade, and a B grader, you know, they'll make you feel good, they'll sound good in the meetings, but when it comes down to performing, when it comes down to pressure, when it comes down to surprising you, that's one of the main things I look for. A superstar will always surprise you. So if you're not being surprised, like wow, you know, that's amazing. Like, wow, he went the extra mile. Those are the hallmarks of a superstar. If you're not experiencing that with your people, they're probably not superstars. So I think if you do nothing but raise your standards, you know, you're going to attract great people. And again, keep in mind, you know, always be trying to become more productive. It's a never-ending journey. Like, you know, you look at a guy like Mark Cuban, right? He's managing, or he's invested in over 100 companies, whatever number it is. So his output, like, you know, if you look at, if he spends 15 minutes on each business every 2 weeks, the value of that time is amazing, right? So that's part of our journey as business growers and as investors, is continuing to make our time more and more valuable. So I have, it's not a PDF, man. It's an 84 page book. That is a PDF that I'm giving away for free. It's called Triple Your Productivity, 3X Your Productivity. And Stefan will give you the link. So make sure you click that. I mean, it goes into everything we talked about in far greater detail, including how to really master your schedule and so many other things. So yeah, we would have had to talk for another 5-6 hours to cover half of what's in there.
I've been through part of it. It's really amazing. I'll put a link below this video for you guys to head on over and check it out. I also want to encourage you guys to head on over to Matt's blog, mattgallant.tv. And when you go on over there, make sure to read his story, because I read your story maybe 2 weeks ago and it was really fascinating. I learned a lot about you, and you're just a really good writer. You know, you're very skilled, and that's, one of your top skill sets that you have. So, I want to thank you again so much for taking the time today. And I think this will really help and benefit a lot of people. So thank you.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks to you. And thanks for everybody who listened through. And just come over to the blog. It's all kinds of fun stuff, all kinds of things to improve the quality of your life. So come on over and enjoy the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Project Life Mastery Podcast. Make sure to visit the blog at www.projectlifemastery.com for more videos, podcasts, and articles that can help you take your life to the next level.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.